This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Hello, I'm here with Chris Gordon from the University of Canterbury, New Zealand. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
It's great to have you here on the Jodcast, which I believe is your first time.
Yes, that's right.
It's great to have you here. So you just gave a great talk on dark matter self-annihilation in the galactic centre. So what evidence is there for this possible phenomenon?
So recently the whole sky has been imaged by a telescope known as the Large Area Telescope on the Fermi satellite. And what they've done is they've taken into account all the known astrophysical sources, like the diffuse galactic background, which comes from the cosmic rays in the galaxy interacting with the interstellar medium. And then they've also taken into account the point sources, such as the giant black hole at our galactic center, Sagittarius A star. There is a point source of gamma rays coming from that area. And even after taking into account those known astrophysical sources, they still see this spherically shaped excess of gamma rays come in from that galactic center region. And the way that excess varies with energy is consistent with what you would expect from two dark matter particles coming together and self-annihilating. And so that's one possibility. But then there's also other astrophysical alternatives that are being looked into.
So we often hear people talk about cold dark matter. Is this idea of self-interacting dark matter consistent with what we normally hear about cold dark matter?
Yes. The usual models that we look at for this excess are based on models which would fit the usual cold dark matter criteria, except often when one models cold dark matter, you say there's no interaction between the dark matter particles. But here what we do is we allow this weak interaction, which means you could occasionally have two dark matter particles come together and self-annihilate into standard model particles. And this happens at such a low level that it wouldn't affect the usual cold dark matter predictions, but it just would have this extra feature where you have very high densities of dark matter. You do see some evidence of standard model particles being created there.
Okay, so it is still consistent with our idea of dark matter.
Yes, that's right.
Can you clarify, what do you mean when you say you think there might be weakly interacting?
So in particle physics, you have different types of force. So there's the electromagnetic force, and then there's the strong nuclear force, and of course there's gravity, and then there's also the weak nuclear force. And so we have seen no sign of the electromagnetic or the strong nuclear force from dark matter, but it is possible that there's this weakly interacting force, which would explain the amount of dark matter we have today, because in the early universe, the dark matter would be in thermal equilibrium with the primordial plasma. And then at some stage when the density dropped due to the expansion of the universe, it froze out. And so if it had typical weakly interacting cross sections, then it would freeze out to give us the amount of dark matter that we see today.
So it can also explain some of the physics of the early universe as well.
Well, the dark matter is a very small component in the early universe, just because the radiation density is dropping like the size of the universe to the power of -4, whereas the dark matter is dropping like the size of the universe to the power of -3. So in the early universe, the dark matter is a very small component. It does kind of explain what's going on in the early universe, but if you had this weakly interacting dark matter or not, or if it was just something which wasn't weakly interacting, like an axion model for dark matter, you would still essentially have the same early universe evolution.
Okay, that makes sense. So do we have any ideas of what kind of particles these dark matter particles could be?
So in this weakly interacting massive particle, or WIMP for short, there are several proposals, and one popular one is that it could be related to this idea of supersymmetry in particle physics, where it's thought that all the standard matter particles have supersymmetric partner particles, but they could have different masses to their standard matter particle counterparts, because otherwise we would have seen them already. So these supersymmetric particles are being looked for at the Large Hadron Collider, and one proposal is the lightest one of these could be the dark matter particle.
So you mentioned that they're looking for the Large Hadron Collider. Do you think we might see them sometime soon?
The trouble is there's a lot of flexibility in the models, and so there certainly are models available which say, you know, once they, now they've got this new increased energy they've just started running at, so they could be seen at that stage. but there's no guarantee that they even exist. And if we don't see them, it could just be that they're at much larger masses, not accessible to the Large Hadron Collider.
So we'll just have to keep building bigger and bigger passports, huh?
Yes, I guess so, until eventually they cost too much, I suppose, or hopefully we eventually find something.
So you've already talked about how we can detect those in astronomy. Are there other possible explanations for this excess of gamma ray signals that we're seeing?
Yes, so this excess of gamma rays, another popular explanation is it's due to a population of millisecond pulsars in that sort of several hundred parsecs of the galactic center region. And these could be sufficiently faint that they wouldn't have been resolved into individual millisecond pulsars yet by the Fermilat instrument or radio observations. And then, because there's so many of them in that relatively small area of the sky, it just appears as a kind of continuous spherical signal.
And how can we distinguish between these two possible things it could be?
So I think one way would be to take more powerful telescopes and observe that area to actually try resolve the individual millisecond pulsars. And so there's several current radio telescopes that may be able to do it, depending on the conditions in that galactic center region. But if the conditions aren't favorable, it may require a future telescope known as the Square Kilometer Array to find them.
So that's the next generation of radio telescopes, really, the Square Kilometer Array.
That's, I believe, coming about in the next 5 or 10 years or so, and it's going to be quite revolutionary, I understand, in its sensitivities.
Yeah, let's hope so, anyway. So it would have to be millisecond pulsars. I think we hear about pulsars, you know, these neutron stars which have these jets coming out of them, but why specifically would it have to be a millisecond pulsar? And what's different about millisecond pulsars?
So there's a couple of differences. So first of all, in order to explain this excess, you'd need the point sources to be quite tightly concentrated around the galactic center region. And because the millisecond pulsars occur when you have these binary systems, that is, they're more likely to be more sort of centrally peaked in their spatial distribution. And additionally, if you look at the spectrum of the gamma rays coming from this region, it fits well with the millisecond pulsars that have been imaged in other areas of the sky.
So millisecond pulsars look differently when in the sky?
Yes, they have a slightly different spectrum, the way the number of gamma rays varies with energy.
Okay. So they're a more plausible candidate. So prior to the Fermi telescope finding this excess, were people actively looking for it at the centre of the galaxy, or is it just something that came up?
Well, at the centre of the galaxy, it's been known as a good place to look for dark matter annihilation because the dark matter annihilation needs two particles to come together, and so it depends on the density squared of dark matter. And so the galactic centre is a local maximum in terms of the density of dark matter, and also it's relatively close by. So if you work out the expected signal, that would be one of the brightest areas if the dark matter is self-annihilating. The only trouble is that there is a lot of astrophysical sources of gamma rays in that area of the sky as well, so that's the downside to that area.
So whilst there's a lot of dark matter there, there's also lots of other stuff.
Yes, so it's a bit of a trade-off. So really, people will only believe any signal of dark matter self-annihilating when it's also seen in the dwarf spheroidals, which are these satellite galaxies which have much less other astrophysical sources of gamma rays. And so if you see gamma rays of the right properties coming from there, it'll be more plausible that that's really dark matter self-annihilating.
So they'd really confirm this kind of...
Yes, and so far they've looked there and haven't seen any gamma rays coming from the neighbouring dwarf spheroidals. And so it could be, though, that the sensitivities aren't good enough yet to detect it from those regions. So those are going to be improved. And after another 5 years, if they still don't see any, that would be another way of ruling out a dark matter explanation of the excess in the galactic centre.
Is it probable that we would see this emission from the dwarf spheroidals? Because you mentioned that to see it, you kind of need an area that's got lots of dark matter. And I would imagine that a dwarf spheroidal would have less dark matter than the centre of our galaxy.
Yes, so it is fainter than the galactic centre. And so that's why it's still possible that we've seen it in the galactic centre and not in the dwarf spheroidals. But we can estimate what the plausible ranges of density for dark matter is in the centre and for the dwarf spheroidals. And from that, we can see within another 5 years, it would be implausible to see it in the galactic centre but not in the dwarf spheroidals.
Hmm. So possibly with the next generation of gamma ray telescopes, we might say.
Yeah, it could be a next generation, or even just with this Fermi Large Area Telescope, because they should carry on for another 5 years, so they may see it in that.
Okay, so just got to wait for some more data.
Yes, you could always say that there is some dark matter annihilation going on, but it's just at too low a level to detect either in the dwarf spheroidals or the galactic centre. But then we would just be able to say the current excess that we see is not due to dark matter self-annihilation.
Okay. So would you be able to talk about a little bit, I mean, it's not necessarily your area, but there are other ways that we might be looking for possible dark matter candidates?
Yeah, so there's several approaches, and so one way is to look for dark matter scattering off atomic nuclei, and that area of study is known as direct detection. And so they have these detectors usually in very deep mines to screen out cosmic ray signals, and if they see something scatter off their detector, which is consistent with the dark matter properties, that would be another approach to detect dark matter.
Okay, so it's interesting to see here about the complementary approaches. So this is kind of what you're working on at the moment. So well, the dark matter annihilation in the centre of galaxies. What are you looking to work on in the future, or what's kind of your next thing?
So at the moment, I think there's still a few loose ends to tie up with this project, and I think we still need to quantify whether there's some other astrophysical explanation associated with this diffuse galactic background, which involves just the standard sea of cosmic rays in our galaxy interacting with the interstellar medium. It could be that we haven't totally taken into account all the uncertainty in that modeling, and that may still change to some extent the amount of excess that is seen in the center.
But will you ever know if you've correctly modelled all of the galactic emission?
It is going to be hard. It is a hard problem. And so we can just try and look at ways of improving it. And then hopefully eventually either we'll be able to confirm that the excess is due to millisecond pulsars using the radio telescopes, or just rule out the dark matter interpretation with the future Fermi data.
So it sounds like a bit of an uphill battle.
Yes, definitely still quite a lot of work to do.
Well, it's been great to hear from you today. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you.